It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The Fantasy Six-Pack Hour. With your hosts, Joe Bob.
Ah, you're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
All right. Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, back in action, is Mr. AJ Applegarth. How's it going on, man?
Good, man. Good. Feeling good. Ready to do a show. It's been a long time, I feel like.
Well, yeah. I mean, considering I was on vacation this past week, and so we pushed this one back to now Sunday night. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're ready to rock and roll, man. Let's just jump right into things here. But we're going to be doing our AFC North preview tonight. And before we jump into that, though, just want to remind everybody, hit that subscribe button, that like button. Leave us those comments. We appreciate it. And thank you for being here. Also, one other thing. If you all have missed the announcement on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, we have new Fantasy Six-Pack memberships available. So right now, in the early stages of building them out fully, but, right now the big deal is that we've got a draft cheat sheet. We've got projections available behind them. We're going to be throwing our rankings behind them. And if you sign up for the all access package, you'll get access to our Discord. So you'll have direct access to me and all the other fantasy analysts on Fantasy Six Pack for football. And, just to let us help you win your leagues. And that's what we like to do. So just a much easier way for us to help you do that. And hopefully you guys sign up. If you do, the first 100 people to do so with this promo code, F6PEARLY, all one word, you get 25% off for the first 100 people. So you're not going to find a better deal than that right now, probably ever. So go ahead and do it. And just go to fantasysixpack.com/plans to pick your membership. So, all right, man. Well, let's get to it. Let's bring on our guest of honor here and friend of the show, Mr. Chris Allen. You can find him 444 Football Guys, NBC Sports Edge. He's everywhere, man. He's awesome. What's up, man?
What's going on, Joe? Like, hi, AJ, man, how are you guys doing? I feel like it's been forever since we've had a chance to sit down and talk, but I'm so glad that y'all were able to bring me back, especially for the AFC North, because y'all know I'm in Ohio, so I can geek out about whether it's my Bengals, Ravens, like whomever. But no, I'm just happy to get a chance and talk ball with y'all again, man. So how are you guys doing?
Hanging in there.
Good. Yeah.
It's summertime, right? It's like there's not a ton going on news-wise. I know that we're waiting for like this Deshaun Watson news to hit at some point, but it's just like this is pretty much like the last period before things get really hopping for fantasy content, right? We've got these few weeks before training camp hits here within middle to late July. So it's kind of like our off season finally. Because we get past the NFL draft, get past OTAs, who's wearing the right cleats, or like who Treylon Burks got asthma, like all this other stuff. Like,
the news quads.
Yeah, exactly. Like the news stories that we all know once we get into October, nobody's going to give a shit, right? Like it's not going to matter in the long run, but it's just like that's the all news we really have to glom onto at this point. So it's like, I'll just talk about what matters at least as much as we can for the time being.
Absolutely.
But yeah. It's a good part of the summer, to be quite honest.
Yeah. A little lighter on content. It is nice to take a little bit of a breather.
Yeah. Part of me would like to say that this show is also brought to you by COVID-19. Go after yourself, COVID. Thanks.
Yeah. AJ that's AJ news. Had it last week, and I'm currently recovering from it, but feeling good enough to do this show. And yeah, that's why I will be muting a lot so I don't clear my throat on mic to annoy everybody, including myself. But let's do what we normally think it's a favorite part of the show, although I'm not so sure how this is going to work out for me this week, but let's do it anyway.
Beer
of the week, Chris. I mean, I have to join in just because it's you. Like,
gotta bring
what you, what you got this week for us, man.
All right, Mr. Brewmaster. I've been working on this recipe for like 6 months. I finally got a chance to brew the first iteration of it about 3 to 4 weeks ago. And I've actually got the second iteration sitting in my fermentation chamber about like 6 feet that way, like right in front of my desk. But this is a mango infused hazy IPA that I've been working on. And actually, I'll see if I can get it like all the way up to the camera. You might be able to see like bits of mango in there, yeah. which is not what I wanted, to be quite honest. I wanted the mango flavor, and I got impatient. And after I did the first iteration of this recipe, the mango didn't really come through. All of the like the hops that I used in the dry hops, so I had some Citra, I've got some Mosaic, I've got like a couple other things in there, but like all you get is that. And I didn't really get a lot of mango taste. So I got impatient. Instead of getting like the mango flavoring that you can buy, I just went, because I go to Kroger's like right across the street, got a bunch of frozen mango, dumped it right into my keg, and this is the stuff that I get now. I like, you guys saw me, like we were sitting backstage before the show started, it took me 5 minutes to pour my drink because a bunch of mango is stuck in the fill line.
Oh, jeez.
So, like, yeah, so like for like I've been brewing beer for like 13 ish years now. And a lot of folks say, oh, yeah, so you've been brewing beer so long, you must be an expert. Absolutely not. I can tell you plenty of things of what not to do when it comes to brewing. And not using a cheesecloth or a brew bag to put your mango in if you want to get the fruit out, that's probably one of the things that you should do. What you shouldn't do is what I did and just dump the stuff straight in there so you can't pour your beer all that well. So, yeah. So that's one of the lessons that I'm learning like as I kind of do these things. But overall, super happy with this beer. I mean, you guys saw the color. That's like, at least for me, I eat with my eyes. So when I see a beer that's like that type of color, that warm orange, like summer type of beer, that's what I want. Aromas, solid, like dead on, like what I wanted, like from a, you know, tropical, fruity, like that sort of aroma. And then, of course, since I've literally have mango chunks in it, it does taste like a mango. Like, it, you know, I'm checking all the boxes.
I hope so, man.
Yeah, it's at 5.5% ABV. Like IBUs around like the 70 to 80, like somewhere in that range. But yeah, fairly solid and a good sessionable beer. Like that's what I try and keep things around. Like 5.5% is where I like it at.
Nice. AJ. Yeah,
the color on that's awesome.
Yeah, that is.
Just like, I did like that. Super Jake from State Farm, thick and hazy. And I myself am trying to keep it local since we will be talking about Baltimore today. I'm drinking a 1623 Brewing Company's Aqua Hop. This is their Imperial Red Rye IPA. It's a thick one as well. It's a 9.9%. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how tonight goes.
You're going to figure this out. So, I'm drinking, AJ, finally one of yours that you brought me.
Yeah.
That's the Devil's Backbone 16-point Imperial IPA. Yeah. This is a 9.1%. I actually had nothing less than this in my fridge outside of a Flying Dog like Snake IPA, which just felt boring. So I was like, you know what? Screw it.
is that the lowest ABV of what I gave you? It might be. I don't know.
No, sorry. You gave me a black IPA, but I don't like black IPA, so I'm probably just going to like that one randomly here and there.
Yeah, but recycle that one.
All right, we'll figure it out eventually. But yeah, I think that one was like 8.4, so it wasn't that much different, or 8.7 or something. So I was like, I'm going to drink this one instead. But I have not had it yet, so let's see what we got. Ooh. That's good. I do like their 8-point. I've never had the 16-point. That's good, man. It's probably good, like 4.25 for on tap.
What's the name of the brewery again?
Devil's Backbone. It's I believe it's Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's like Lexington, Virginia. All right. Yeah, it's pretty solid. They make some good brews. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's jump into it here. And, you know, before we get into the position previews and go player by player here, we just got a standard NFL type style question, not necessarily fantasy related. And, you know, this division seems kind of wide open, right? Every team kind of believes that they can win it. Now, one team probably thought they had a much better chance until probably this Tuesday, but with the Watson news about to get thrown down. But still, who do you think will be the team to come out on top? Do you think is the Bengals that will repeat, or what?
At least for me, I think the Bengals have at least done enough in the offseason. Let's just keep it just like straight, like what they've done over the offseason to maintain their, I guess, their bid at the top spot in the AFC North. Because if you looked at the adjusted sack rate for Joe Burrow last year, what, like 90 some odd sacks? He what broke the record for a number of sacks taken in a playoff game against that Tennessee Titans game. Which was just like horrific to watch all the way, like start to finish. I couldn't believe that they actually won that game and then actually see them get to the Super Bowl. But it's just, that has been, the offensive line has been like the bane of their existence, or like their Achilles heel for a number of seasons now. And to see them actually be, let's say, aggressive, and, you know, and the fact that they actually have adjusted the culture enough to be able to attract good free agents like Lyle Collins. I mean, while he might have had a like down year in his final season in Dallas, like to be able to have that type of turnaround where they were legitimate Super Bowl contenders, like just this past season. And now with the way that the team is trending now with their player development and so on and so forth, to be able to attract a guy of his talent level, that says something like about the franchise and where it's headed right now. So I do think that with their moves on along the offensive line, whether it's Karras, whether it's Kappa, whether it's Collins, along with like some of the moves they made on defense as well. I mean, going out and getting a guy like Dax Hill, like when they drafted him. So you have that kind of at least younger safety or like player that can be like that, like in the on the defense. But still, their defensive line is still legitimate, too. I think overall on both sides of the ball, I think Cincinnati has done enough that they should have at least a solid bid at still being like number one in the AFC North. If not them, then I'd probably have to give it to the Ravens just because Lamar Jackson. And just if you think about the number of injuries that they had last season, I mean, if that's really the biggest thing, or like their biggest knock for not really having a good team, just not even a good offense, just like a good team last year. And they should have like most of their starters returning back this season healthy, made some changes as well. I think it's like Cincinnati and Baltimore are the two that at least are the scariest teams like to come out of the AFC North, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'd have to agree with that. I think it's Cincy's division to lose, but I think between them and Baltimore, it's going to be a dogfight. I mean, the two of them, every divisional game in this division is always a close, hard fought game. So I think the Ravens, I'm very interested to see how they come out of the gates, because you've got the whole Lamar, you know, contract issue that, we've had some discussions or whatever he said like 56 times in the one interview that he had. I'm interested to see what he's going to put together. And I'm really like excited to see these running backs come back and hopefully be able to play to what we've seen out of them, if not more, you know, coming off of these rough injuries. So that's what I'm seeing. I mean, Pittsburgh, I feel like they're just a rebuild right now, and Cleveland's going to be okay, but it really depends on what we see with Watson.
Yeah, Cleveland could be like the weird dark horse. Like if Watson does somehow play this year, then that might change things for a lot of people. But yeah, I think it's Baltimore and Cleveland obviously up top, and you guys said pretty much everything, so I'm not gonna, you know, beat the dead horse here. But so let's jump into our positions, and we'll start with quarterback. And what we're gonna do, Chris, is we're gonna rip through some ADP real quick. We're using the sleeper ADP. And then we'll go, you know, team by team, and kind of ask a question on specific players or just like general position wise for that team to get a little more into the nitty gritty of things here. So ADP for quarterbacks, we've got Lamar Jackson at 4, Joe Burrow at 5, Deshaun Watson still sitting at 13, although I bet that's gotten a lot lower over the last couple of weeks, and it's going to get a lot lower quickly. Trubisky at 31, and then Brissett kind of made the board all of a sudden at 49. So that's relevant, by the way. So just had to mention that one. But AJ, go ahead and
all right. Well, I'll get it off here. We just talked about Lamar being higher ADP by one spot, so not much. But is Joe Burrow now the best quarterback in this NFC North, or do you think it is someone else?
No, I think Burrow has done enough as a passer in what? So he started, 10 games his rookie season before getting knocked out against Washington. And then now essentially the entire offense and turn the entire franchise around and taking them to a Super Bowl this past year. I think it's him at this point. Like Lamar Jackson, like not taking anything away from him, former MVP. I mean, all of the good things that Lamar has done. But I think Joe Burrow at this point has shown enough that he's capable of, if not matching or if not matching, but exceeding like what Lamar has done, like on the field at this point. And you can see it, like it shows up on film almost instantly. I've seen a number of film analysts compare the way that he scans and reads the field. It's very similar to Aaron Rodgers, the way that he can pick up defenses, adjust protections, like what little protection that he has, and also being able to read like key players. So if it's not his primary read, whether it's like T. Higgins or Jamar Chase, but be also being able to pick up some of the like the backside digs or like the underneath routes, whether it be to Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd. And we've all saw like how CJ Uzoma popped off for a couple of games as well. So it's just he can scan like the full, like he can make multiple reads, scan the full range of the field. And while his arm strength, like coming out of LSU, was something of a knock, we've seen him try and make like some of those like deeper passes like down the field in order to connect with whether it's Jamar, whether it has been like Uzoma or whomever. And so like that's it, he's a heady player. And it's so, I mean, it's such a great thing for Cincinnati to actually have like one of the guys at quarterback. And by the guys, I mean, that's what you need in order to have a franchise that at least has playoff aspirations or obviously like Super Bowl contention aspirations on a yearly basis. Like you have to have the Patrick Mahomes, the Justin Herberts. I mean, those types of level players, because without it, you do find yourself in that quarterback purgatory, like with pretty much the other two teams currently in the AFC North. Like we don't know what Kenny Pickett is going to be. And we don't know like what's going to happen. Like if the Browns have to go away from Deshaun Watson and have to start like Jacoby Brissett or like whomever the case may be. It's like, that's what we, so you know, like where your team is at if you don't have one of the guys at quarterbacks, and Joe Burrow can be that. Now, my only concern with the Bengals is their pace of play, because last season it was, I don't know, it was something of a like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of thing. Because in weeks 1 through 8, they were like 20th in neutral passing rate. I mean, we thought they were going to come out firing like Burrow did like during his rookie campaign. That didn't happen. And then it was weeks 10 through 18 where the lights started to click on and we saw them start to pass on more volume. And they were actually like top 12 in neutral passing, like towards the back end of the season. Is that going, where's the balance going to be at? I don't expect them to be like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and be like top 3 in pass rate over expectation, but are they still going to be utilizing passing on early downs? Are they still going to try and play at just any sort of up tempo like this season? They were 30th in pace of play just this past year. So it's like if they can try and, you know, utilize or pick up the pace a bit more with this offense that features, in my personal opinion, like the best like wide receiver trio in the league at this point. And I don't think that's too much of a a hot take to say that. But it's just Joe Burrow was top 10 in EPA per play, completion percentage over expected, intended air yards per attempt as a quarterback. It's just, he is one of these guys. And so if he can be efficient and accurate while still pushing the ball downfield, if they wind up having or adding some more volume like to the offense this year, I mean, Cincinnati, they'll definitely be able to, all of the pass catchers should be able to pay off their ADP along with Joe Burrow, who I think is aggressively priced like among like the quarterbacks at this point. But I do think that he's shown enough and the offense has shown enough, they should be able to match that ADP.
Yeah. So my take on Joe Burrow is that I think he's the best quarterback in the NFC or AFC North. But I still think Lamar's the better fantasy quarterback because of the rushing, right? So separate the two a little bit. But
yes,
to your point about the pace of play, and I mentioned this when we did our team previews specifically for Cincy, is you're right. You saw that kind of flip of the switch a little over midway through the season last year where like it was all of a sudden like, oh, this offense like was for real. Yeah. Like they were moving the ball, they were scoring, they were getting tons of yards, they were chunk plays. It was awesome. And it's funny because you saw like Joe Burrow take a huge step up, right? Because of that. But Mixon kind of went the opposite. And so what I think was happening early on was, you know, Burrow was coming back from that horrific knee injury, right? And so they were protecting him a little bit. They were handing the ball off a lot more. They're doing more checkdowns, just like easy plays, get him into the flow, get, you know, see what we got with him, right? Let's keep him upright. Mm-hmm. And then they figured out like, oh, we you know, he's probably fine. So, you know, he got his legs under him a little bit more and they just started pushing. So yeah, you know, I'm not, who knows if it's going to be at that exact same pace that we saw the last like 6-7 weeks of the season, but I would believe we're going to see more of that than we would the opposite. That's just my take on it. So, but let's move over here to Cleveland, and we've kind of alluded to this already. Excuse me. You know, we've got the Deshaun Watson news looming. It sounds like he's going to be suspended at least for this season. So with that being said, like, let's say in your drafts, Watson isn't, so let's say you're drafting tonight or tomorrow or Tuesday morning or whatever, right? Last couple of rounds go through and Watson's still sitting there. Do you just take a stab at him just in case? Like, if he does play, like, you've gotten a free top 10 quarterback, or you just completely out?
Me personally, I'm completely out, like, right now. It's just I can't think of a scenario where, given everything that's gone on from the allegations to just looking at how the NFL has handled, like, let's say, but for all intents and purposes, let's say just lesser crimes, it's just, I cannot see a path to him like playing at least a meaningful amount of games that's going to matter to us, like, for fantasy. Yeah. Now, does it change my stance on drafting Amari Cooper and like guys like Donovan Peoples-Jones and like David Njoku? Not a ton, just because understanding the way that they're deployed on the field, they can probably recoup most of their value. And I think for the most part, the risk of not having Deshaun Watson is priced in to at least to most of them, I think. So it's just more about how we value Deshaun. I think in redraft, from a redraft perspective, at least for me, the risk does not outweigh the gain, the projected or possible gain of having a guy like him. Sure, absolutely. No argument when he's on the field, top 10, in the top 10 conversation, week in and week out. That is not a problem. I mean,
now what about dynasty startup drafts? Like, would you change your opinion there? Like,
yes, absolutely.
What do you do with him there?
I would say, actually, I was just in a dynasty startup just yesterday with some other folks from Ohio. Myself, Bob Lung, like, who else was there? Like, Dynasty Madman, Rich Rebar, like a number of other, like, just Ohio based folks. And actually, I can pull up actually right now where did Deshaun Watson go? So Deshaun Watson was drafted in the, oh shoot, he was taken as quarterback 14. It was a super flex draft. So quarterback 14, which I'm not mad at all. Like, yeah. I think that's like decent value, like, for a guy that if he winds up missing this year and then he winds up coming back next year, and then all of the, you know, all of these allegations and cases and everything will be behind him at that point, that's not bad. You know, unless we're really projecting an indefinite ban, multi-year suspension or whatever the case may be, which I haven't heard, at least, or I haven't seen the rumors around those, that length of suspension really have any legs to it. So a year seems about what's most common, or at least most folks think, is going to happen. So from a dynasty standpoint, that makes sense, like, to be able to grab them at that value.
I agree.
Yeah, it's hard for me to really try to go after him this year unless I'm in a league that randomly has put suspended players on the IR or something like that, and it's, you know, keeper league or dynasty. But other than that, I think I'm out on him this year. I just, it's not going to be worth what you're going to get out of it. Even looking at it and being like, oh yeah, I got him as a late round pick. And then it's like, you find out he's gone for the year redraft. You know, he's your first drop. Mm-hmm. You're dropping him before the season even starts, probably.
Yeah.
Just to have that open spot. So moving on to Pittsburgh here. At this point, it looks like Mitch Trubisky will most likely be the week one starter. But do you think he's going to end the season as a starter, or is Pittsburgh going to throw caution to the wind here and put Kenny Pickett out there sooner rather than later?
They almost have to, right? Because of the draft capital spent to acquire Pickett. And with the way that quarterback contracts are going, it's not like even with having the fifth year possible option, quarterbacks aren't treating it that way anymore. Shoot, for most of the quarterbacks that even have any sort of, I would say, certainty regarding if they're going to get a second contract with their team or not, they're already in the negotiation phases after, like, let's say their third season or going into their fourth season. I mean, look at what, I mean, we'll probably talk about here in a minute, but look at what, like, Lamar Jackson is at, like, right now, Kyler Murray or any of those guys. So it's like, they have to do this right now. And there's no, and there, it does the team no good to spend a first round pick on a quarterback to let them sit, especially behind a, let's say at this point for Trubisky, we'll call him a journeyman quarterback. Like, he's now on his third team, and we know what Trubisky is. The Steelers probably know what Trubisky is at this point. So there's nothing to be gained. I would hope so too. I mean, especially for the money that they put into him, like, for signing him too. So it's like, there's nothing to be gained by, I mean, other than trying to, like, I don't know, save the face of the franchise by possibly winning some more games. But again, what does that gain you when the incoming quarterback class from next year also happens to have a pretty decent crop of quarterbacks in it? So if you want to have a shot at taking them, you probably want a higher pick. So if you want to know if Pickett's the guy, then you need to figure that out now. And that's not even from a, you know, 2022 to 2023 standpoint. That's just the way quarterback contracts are working right now, with the way that the NFLPA has set up, like, this, the latest CBA. Like, you have to know, like, do you have the guy or not? Can this guy at some point within the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years take you down a playoff, like a long playoff run? I mean, if the answer is no, okay, fine, then it's time to move on. But think about how many other team moves have to happen once you find out that you have a franchise quarterback. I think, like, look at what Cincinnati's doing. Like, they now know within the last, like, 2 years that they have one of the guys at quarterback. And what has it allowed them to do, especially on a rookie contract? It's allowed them to franchise and, like, franchise tag, like, the proper players in order to retain their services, build, like, on the defense, bring in other like, expensive, like, free agents, like, along the offensive line. It's like, those are the types of things that having a franchise quarterback will do. It's like almost like a selling point, like, to other teams or to other players, like, to want them to come and play for you. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know if you have that, then again, you're doing your team a disservice by not being able to figure that out. So without even having to discuss any stats, like, just at the team level, I mean, they need to know, like, is Pickett going to be the guy? Because, like we said, we all know what Trubisky is. I mean, he was, like, bottom 30. I mean, like, or, like, he was, like, barely in the top 30 for literally any passing metric. Like, the last time he was a starter, he was, like, 35th. Like, 35th in passing grade, like, for, like, PFF. Like, and that's in a clean pocket. In a clean pocket. Like, we know, like we know what he can't, like, even his highs are, like, just barely above, like, replacement level quarterback play. So,
but he was in Buffalo last year behind,
looked good,
arguably the best quarterback in the league, and you know, with Brian Daboll there. So he's got to be awesome now, right?
Exactly. And hats off
he learned so much in that year.
Hats off to Trubisky's agent for positioning Trubisky in a way that would allow his client to, like, get some more money, because without that year, he gets nothing. Like, he's wasting away, I mean, on some worse team. Might
be Ryan Leaf at this point if he's not in Buffalo last year.
Bingo. So it's like, good for him, but we know what he is. The team knows what he is. So the Pickett at some point has to be on the field for them. Like, if not for the fact that they need to be able to move on and find out what life after Ben Roethlisberger is going to be. Because think about what that offense was like last year. Ben Roethlisberger's time to throw last year was 2.38 seconds, according to Next Gen Stats. That's ridiculous. All right, the next fastest quarterback was 2.5 seconds at the time to throw, and that was Tom Brady. But Tom Brady was throwing at an adjusted an average depth of target about like 8.4 like yards, intended air yards like per attempt. Ben Roethlisberger's was like 7.
Yeah,
like the Tom Brady was whipping it down the field. Ben Roethlisberger was throwing ducks, you know, to yeah. I mean, to his guys like maybe 5, 6, 7 yards down the field. So like no, they were playing, yeah, exactly. Like just, they were playing like two completely different games. Good,
so
yeah,
absolutely.
Like, I mean, that's what he had, and it was like all right.
But what is this? What is it worked for them? But like, what is this offense going to be like now in 2022 and beyond? Are they going to be a team that's going to push the ball down the field, actually unlock a guy like Chase Claypool? I don't know, but they need to figure that out. They need to know like what, like who, like what archetype of player they're going to now be able to coach up and actually integrate into their offense. Because it was Ben Roethlisberger's offense beforehand. I mean, make no mistake about it. So what is that like? What is that offense going to look like now? And like all those questions need to be answered by having Kenny Pickett on the field. You ain't going to answer it by having Trubisky there.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, we'll probably see Trubisky start the year, but it'll probably be a pretty quick switch over to Pickett, I imagine.
Yeah. After, so, like, you know, he gets baptized by Myles Garrett, you know, a couple of times, they'll just be like, yeah, get the rook in, like, get Pickett in. Like, yeah. we need to figure something else out.
Like, we still have Ben Roethlisberger here just dumping the ball to Najee Harris. Yeah. What happened in Buffalo? We thought you got better.
Yeah. We were lying.
All right, so let's finish up here with the quarterbacks and get over to Baltimore. And we've got Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, like, injuries held him back last year. The offense wasn't quite the same last year. Lack of the running game, per, you know, in general. But can we see him get back to being a top three fantasy quarterback? Considering that he has a lack of receiving options, especially now that they've gotten rid of Hollywood Brown. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, like, I don't know. So from 2020 to 2021, like, we saw them make like this massive leap forward in terms of neutral passing rate. I think they went from like 30th, almost like 2 years straight, like from 2019 when Lamar really came on, and like maybe 30th and 31st in 2019 and 2020. And last year they were all the way up to 12th. And we saw just like this, I don't know, more of a reliance on the passing game than in years past, which I think is a fine experiment, but you just can't try and change your offense while also having like literally almost like 27 players like on IR by like week 15. Like that's not going to work. Like when you lose not your starting but your backup running back before this season even starts, and then your rookie wide receiver that you drafted to be the chain mover, he had to, like, what surgery did he wind up having? Core muscle surgery, so he misses the first 2 months of the season. So it's like, I'm happy to draft like Mark Andrews like at cost, because he was a good tight end coming out of college, and we now see him unlocked with the opportunity he was given. But it's just, there has to be something else there. Like, do I think Lamar Jackson can be an above average or an elite just passing quarterback? Yes I do. Because even coming out of Louisville, I mean, for all the horrific things, or like how bad of a person Bobby Petrino is, like, his offenses in college are actually like one of the best offenses like for college, or for college quarterbacks to transition into the NFL, like the complexity of it and what they ask quarterbacks to do like at that level. So I think Lamar is a good passing quarterback like on his own. He just has his legs to bail him out like when he needs to. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been, let's say, 15th to 16th like in EPA per play as a quarterback for the last two seasons. It's just that if your passing options go from like Marquise Brown and Mark Andrews and maybe like a couple of other guys, like, I mean, for as bad as they possibly could be, I mean, they're not like, J.K. Dobbins isn't a bad pass catcher. It's just that they didn't have him there. And also for the number of injuries that they had along their offensive line, I mean, they brought in who was it, Alejandro Villanueva from Pittsburgh. The dude was a turnstile like last season. So it's like, and they also had like two other injuries to their starters along their offensive line too. So it's just, they weren't given any favors. So on top of changing their offensive scheme, they also have these injuries to go with it. And also like the injuries to their defense as well. So it's just the entire way that Baltimore likes to play, having a strong defense, being able to lean on the running game, but also having an effective passing game, all that crumbled like all in the same season. Mm-hmm. So I just think that there's probably some balance to what their neutral passing rate is going to be this year. Do I think they're going to go all the way back to like dead last in terms of neutral passing rate this year? No. I just do. I do think though, with having a guy like Marquise Brown like leave the offense, they just need to make sure that they're actually building up or developing the wide receivers that they have behind the guys that they have. I mean, I've already seen beat writers talking about Devin Duvernay getting involved, James Proshay like being involved out of the slot, and that's cool that they have these new like these new options. But these are guys that they've had since 2020. Also. I mean, they've also drafted guys like Slade Bolden, like Trevin Clark, Mekhi Polk. Tylan Wallace is still there from the 2021 draft. It's just they need to be able to like cycle in and like build up some of these players that they've drafted and that they've acquired, because like this needs to be an offense that if they're going to try and pass more and it's going to start featuring the wide receiver position more, they just have to have like better wide or at least wide receivers they can count on. So but they don't have the answers to that question yet. So yeah. Until we see that actually happen, I do have some questions like about like if they're I have some concern there, but I think I see what they're trying to do, but it's just we don't like there's some uncertainty because we don't know who these players are, like what their skill level is.
Yeah, I think the only way Lamar this season gets back to top three, and I firmly believe it can happen because it looks like they're going back to more of the running style that they had a couple years ago. Is he's going to have to do the vast majority of it with his legs. And that's fine. It worked. You know, it, mm-hmm. You know, they're not a high passing volume team. And you know, yeah, Mark Andrews is taking a big step forward, as you said, but I just, it's hard to really trust any of the rest of the guys, in my opinion. So
it's tough. It's definitely tough. I don't know. This is maybe it might be a hot take like from me, but thinking about it this way, everybody assumes that because Marquise Brown, like a good wide receiver, not the best or like not top 12 or anything like that, but a good wide receiver departs Baltimore and goes somewhere else. So everybody assumes they're going to go like be more run heavy. Why isn't the same logic being applied to like Green Bay or Kansas City? Like they literally lost like Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams. I mean, just tiers above Marquise Brown. But we're not assuming that all of a sudden Green Bay is going to be this like power running team. We're not assuming Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be like the second coming of, you know, insert like big name running back here. So I just don't understand like why we're say now all of a sudden inserting that logic to say that this is now going to be just a strong running team just because like Marquise Brown left.
The reason why I don't is because we've seen Baltimore do it, right? And they've got the quarterback to help with that as well. So the offense goes through that, running back, you know, I'm blanking right now, but you know, the fake handoff quarterback dips out, right. You know, that type of thing. So
yeah.
The run pass option. Thank you. Jeez. but so you've got that, but then you look at guys like Mahomes and you look at guys like Rodgers, right. Those dudes love to just sling the ball around. That's Lamar really never has done that. I mean, his most passing attempts in a single season has been 401. I mean, that's not the offense that those guys run. So, but Lamar does. Lamar runs the run heavy offense. They've got the running back. They've got the offensive scheme already built around it. And, you know, I mean, Green Bay may be different, you know, I think Green Bay's got better running backs than Kansas City, but I would say Baltimore's got arguably better running backs to sustain that kind of offense. You know, we've seen even their backups come in and just like go off, you know, except for when they all get hurt. And that's
true.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
But you know, so I think it's just more of the type of offensive scheme that you know, we've seen in the past from these guys. And I'll be honest, like you've mentioned like the neutral passing game has gotten better for the Baltimore Ravens. It might've gotten better only because they tried more, but like I don't know if it actually helped them. I think they really struggled with it in the, for the most part.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to separate the fact that they had so many injuries along the offensive line and were relying on a key piece in Rashad Bateman, and he wasn't even there for like the first 2 months. So it's like, again, I don't know if it was just an experiment that they tried it and it just didn't work, and now they just want to go back to what worked like the previous 2 years. But yeah, again, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, time will tell. I mean, look, we're here to kind of predict and kind of lead you in the right direction.
Yeah,
as best we can. That's kind of what we think. So anyway, AJ, let's move on here to our running backs.
All right. So we've got a handful of backs here. Pretty powerful running division. We've got Najee Harris at 6 ADP. We've got Joe Mixon at 7. We've got Nick Chubb at 9. J.K. Dobbins still hovering at 20, coming off the injury, which... a little high in my opinion, but okay. I can get on board with that. Kareem Hunt, 30. Gus Edwards, 55. Samaje Perine at 71. D'Ernest Johnson at 74. Journeyman Mike Davis at 83. Tyler Beatty at 84. And Chris Evans at 104.
Yeah, so... a lot of good names on that list, especially at the very top. But let's start off here with Baltimore. We finish off with them, so let's start with them this time. You know, there is news that Dobbins and Edwards are going to possibly start the year on the pup. That could be a training camp thing only, possibly. I mean, are you at all worried about drafting them coming off of their injuries? I mean, their ADPs are pretty nice, to be honest. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think where they're currently being drafted at, like the risk of them missing, I don't know about the starting on the pup, because, but still taking a little bit more time for them to get like back on their feet, literally, I have no issue with that. I think that kind of risk is baked into the ADP at this point. Mm-hmm. But J.K. Dobbins, like in 2020, top half of the league in terms of broken tackle rate. Their success rate, I think Dobbins was fourth, according to Football Outsiders in 2020. So like an efficient runner, powerful runner, elusive runner, like fairly as well too. So it's just, and also like decent, like what, 5-7% target share, like in the passing game as well. So like it all works out for him to at least exceed like where he's at in terms of his ADP if he comes back healthy. Because fifth round, man, like that, the running backs that are typically being selected around there don't have like the same level of opportunity, like to your point earlier, Joe, because if this is going to be a scheme that really does emphasize like the running back talent, like Lamar is going to probably get his, but having a guy like J.K. Dobbins there as well to kind of tote the rock for him, especially in those short yardage type situations, I mean, that's the perfect mix. Like that's really where opportunity and also opportunity and talent kind of intersect to give us like the fantasy production that we would want from a guy that's typically drafted, let's say, in the second or third round, like to be quite honest. So if we're getting almost a 2-round discount on him at this point, and hopefully we get some more positive news, like as we get closer to training camp, then hey, I'll take that ADP all day long.
Yeah, 100%. I love Dobbins at his ADP right now. AJ, any thoughts? And then next question.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I could probably get on board with Dobbins, where he's at ADP wise. I just think it's, I mean, he's showcased such good talent and ability 2 years ago that last year was just a complete and utter disappointment because of the injury. So obviously you're hoping that he's going to be able to get back to where he was. So looking at Cincy though, I mean, Joe Mixon finally had himself a year. After seeing what he did in like a very good offense, finishing RB3 in half PPR, of course. I mean, is he a lock to be a top five running back again for 2022?
I don't know about a lock. I would say that, again, almost when we were talking about Cincinnati's offense as a whole, he definitely has the case to be made. I think and I've seen like a debate over his workload in the past week or so because of his lack of usage on third downs. Like we saw Samaje Perine like coming in and cycling out for him on a number of occasions, like throughout the regular season. And then of course it was Perine that was on the field that wound up not converting on third down, like in the Super Bowl, which went like ultimately cost him the game. But it's just, there has been, like, he's had that shared workload with P-Ron over the last, like, especially even, like, it was more pronounced last season. And, but if you look at Mixon's overall opportunity share, 67% of the, like, the running back workload, 8 to 9% target share, which is really everything that you, at least it checks the boxes for what you would want in a first and second round running back. And on a, like, an efficient offense, we had that conversation. We were kind of outlining the Bengals offense as a whole. So I think that he is very much locked in, like, for a top 12 season, top five. Let's just see how things shake out, because that can be like their schedule, like schedules, injuries, like blah, 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 can be volatile on a year to year basis. But top 12, absolutely. The one question I do have, though, is who is going to be manning that third down spot? Like, are they going to continue to use like P Ryan in that spot? I've heard some conversation amongst beat writers and folks close to the team saying that Chris Evans is going to have like a larger role like this year. And I was poking around like Player Profiler a few weeks ago. Actually, Player Profile has Damian Harris as the best comp like for Chris Evans, but Evans is also a pass catcher. Like, Evans had a higher EPA per target and a higher yards per route run efficiency stat that PFF tracks. He had a higher higher efficiency metrics than any of the running backs like on the Bengals. Like, he had more he had more targets on third down than Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine like last year. So it's just, I don't know like what that workload is going to shake out to be, because I know the team likes Perine and what he was able to do throughout the regular season, not necessarily the Super Bowl. But at least having some sort of doubt regarding Perine's lock on that role should give like some drafters, and like I've been drafting Evans quite a bit, but I think there's some smoke to that fire that Evans might have a larger role in 2022.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one hesitation I have with Mixon this season as far as drafting him at his value at his ADP right now is, as we kind of mentioned with the fact that Burrow kind of took a step up those last, you know, 6-7 weeks of the season, Mixon really did kind of take a step back, right? And, you know, if you look at the season as a whole, Mixon was fun, was amazing. If you look at the last five games he played, he was RB18, 12.9 points per game. You're drafting him as a top 3, 4, 5 running back right now, 7 running back. Like, that's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow, man. Like, if that's the way that we see this offense going and they're going to maybe back off using him, I mean, he was getting an unbelievable workload early on. I mean, we saw 29 carries, 20 carries, 18 carries, 18, you know, 30 and 28 carries mixed in, by the way, with like four or five receptions time and time again. And then it just the rug was pulled out from under him. And it was just like, nah, we're good. We're going to just see what Burrow's got. Like, and he really, I mean, he was seeing still like a good number of carries, but like we weren't seeing those like 25, those carries in the 20s. And the receiving game for him just gone, except for the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Touchdowns weren't there like they were early on either. So I'm probably out on Mixon at his ADP. But I mean, I'd find it hard to believe he doesn't finish as a top 12 running back.
Yeah.
But top 6, 7 where he's going right now, probably not buying him at that price. But let's move over here to Pittsburgh. And as we said earlier too, Big Ben was a big reason why Najee Harris led all running backs in receptions. 74 last year, just amazing. But, you know, just dump, right? I mean, 2.5 seconds to throw the ball, right? With the QB switch, right, and let's say, you know, despite who it is, how much of a concern do we have with Harris returning that value that he's got at RB6 right now, ADP? Or do we think the checkdowns are still going to be there for him and he's going to be fine?
No, I would assume that the checkdowns are going to be there for him, because we were talking about whether it's Mitch Trubisky, but Mitch Trubisky made Tariq Cohen fairly fantasy relevant like in his time there in Chicago. So it's entirely possible that Najee Harris, like, while a completely different archetype of running back, but still the checkdowns will be there, like, most likely for Najee. And I would say also it's not just the quarterback play. I would think Pickett would also like at least know to use a guy like Harris like as his escape route, like should he need to come off of his primary read or whatever. Pickett's like, I wouldn't say a statue, but like slightly mobile. But I would think instead of running, he could just like, you know, chuck it down like real quick to Najee. But I think it's the offensive line that I have like the biggest concern with. And like last year, and they were crumbling. Like they had, I mean, like I said, like they had Alejandro Villanueva, like he had left since he was already like essentially ready to retire, gave his one last shot like in Baltimore, did not play well there. Moved over a couple of other like offensive linemen from last year as well. A couple of injuries, if I'm remembering correctly, at least one injury along the offensive line. So they've made some moves in order to shore that up. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to have like one of the best like run blocking lines like in the league, but I do think that at least the improvement should allow Harris to be a bit more efficient. He was down at like 34th in success rate like last year, according to Football Outsiders. I mean, broken tackle rate, like not that great as well, because he was just getting met like at or behind the line of scrimmage, like on every single run, like it felt like. So if the line gives him some more push, and let's say he has even just a smidgen of better quarterback play, so that instead of having teams that are just like, well, Big Ben is not going to, he's not going to check it deep, so we're going to just have all of our safeties play up. And if they actually have to respect, let's see, even an intermediate game, let's not even think about them throwing it deep, let's just say an intermediate game, then I do think it's going to open up some more lanes for Najee Harris. So I think just Ben's retirement now provides them a chance to kind of open up this offense, and that should help like Harris this year.
Yeah, I really like Harris's upside this year just because of the fact that, again, we know what Trubisky is. I don't think his role, that Harris, I don't think his role is going to change that much this year. I mean, as a rookie, he was phenomenal. And it was exactly what an aging Big Ben needed to really get through last year, honestly.
Yeah.
So,
you just hope that yards per carry goes up.
Yeah.
That was pretty brutal last year.
But
I would like to see more rushing attempts out of him this year to kind of counteract.
307 last year. I don't know about that. He just needs to actually have above
a full needs to
yards per carry. 3.9 was just brutal.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, like, teams loaded the box because they knew Big Ben couldn't do anything. So hopefully, I think as Chris, you were saying, like, you know, any change of quarterback, almost any change of quarterback, I should say, should probably help here. But anyway, AJ, why don't we finish up here with the Browns?
All right. So the Browns, we've got Nick Chubb. Basically, he's shown his talent to be an RB1. You know, year in, year out, it seems like, without him getting a lot of the receiving work because of Kareem Hunt. I mean, do we think that Hunt's still going to just eat into his ceiling because of him being there for more of the rushing, or I'm sorry, for more of the receiving, or because of this quarterback situation with Watson being an unknown? Are they going to have to lean on both of these guys in rushing and receiving?
I think it's probably be a bit of both, to be quite honest. And we've seen them do this in the past, like where they've either tried to get them both on the field at the same time, like either doing something like pony packages, split back set, something along those lines to get them both out there, because you're absolutely right, AJ. Like they have Nick Chubb, one of the best pure runners like in the league, in my personal opinion. You could probably make the case for Jonathan Taylor, but I do think like Nick Chubb, from a power burst speed, like, and even just vision perspective, like Nick Chubb probably takes the cake for me. But last year, like, you're 100% right, like Kareem Hunt like takes away like the ceiling for Nick Chubb. I mean, Hunt had an 11.9% target share last year. If you're a running back that's being drafted in the second round and you have direct competition at the position, and that person is taking five to six targets, you know, over like a 3-4 game like sample, like if they're taking up like that much of a target share, like in your own offense, there's no way for you to meet like or exceed your ceiling if you have like direct competition. They were like pummeling him with targets. Now, of course, some of that like were the games like where Nick Chubb was out and we had like just all Kareem Hunt. But even still, like in the games where the two of them were together, you'd see Kareem Hunt get 2 to 3 targets here, red zone rushing attempts, or even red zone targets where Nick Chubb wouldn't get any. So there has to be some sort of scenario where that they again start to use both of them together, almost in the same way that I've been reading about the Packers trying to get Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon on the field at the same time, because we all know that both of them can be efficient, both of them can be used in the passing game, and Nick Chubb by his own right, like he can be used in the passing game and also be efficient as a pass catcher as well. But the team just needs to be able to be a bit more creative to get both of them out there and maybe have them both running routes, or maybe having Kareem Hunt like running deeper routes and having Nick Chubb like be the one to make sure that the defense plays the run or like focused on the running game, because they have that option there. But I think the biggest thing for Nick Chubb is just the hope that he just gets more of the red zone work. Now, if he can cash in on some more touchdowns, because that's how Aaron Jones has been able to pay off his like early round like ADP for like the last 2 to 3 seasons. Like we know we got like Quadzilla just like waiting in the background, like for him to just take over the Green Bay backfield. And while Kareem Hunt is like nowhere near the same size and power as AJ Dillon, but it's just if they were able to like if Nick Chubb got more red zone work and was able to get, what did Aaron Jones have, something ridiculous, like 19 touchdowns like last year, the year beforehand. Like if Nick Chubb had that, we wouldn't even have this, like nobody would care about Kareem Hunt because we knew that like that level of opportunity would be there like for a guy like Chubb. And of course, having Aaron Rodgers under center like probably helps out as well. But it's just like those are the things, like you need to be able to have like those money touches that are going to allow you to get the prerequisite amount of touchdowns in order to really like boost or exceed like your ADP. But like you said earlier, to open us up, Kareem Hunt, like on the team, caps that ceiling because they're always going to want to try and find ways to get him on the field because he's a good player. He was a good player when he was still in KC. So it's just like having both of them there will always kind of be a hindrance to Chubb, but I think he's been able to overcome most of it just by being a damn good running back.
Yeah.
But hopefully he'll get some more opportunity.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I think on the flip side too, I mean, we may see more teams really trying to stack the box and test Brissett to see if he's going to get the ball out to these receivers. So I think in that stance, it really needs to be there needs to be some design plays for both of those backs to be there and be a dump off and it not always be Kareem Hunt, because the defenses are going to cue in on that. If they see Hunt on the field, they're going to know that the ball could be coming to him
over
Chubb. So you put them both out there and mix it up enough, it could be pretty interesting. So
yeah, I've saw Justice Mosqueda at Jumosk on Twitter. He posted a couple of plays that Green Bay had run last year. I think Green Bay could honestly just steal straight from them, where they had a split back set. So they've got Aaron Rodgers, shotgun, AJ Dillon and Aaron Jones like on either side of them. But then they motion Aaron Jones out to the perimeter, and then they keep AJ Dillon in the backfield. Aaron Jones runs like a 12-yard post and Aaron Rodgers hits him for like a chunk gain. How, like, you can't tell me that Kareem Hunt couldn't run that same route and draw the same level 100%. Of defensive attention. And like they could take that same play and run that same play and get the same results.
Well, you don't have to move a linebacker out on him.
Yeah.
And then that opens up the door for Chubb to run right up the middle. So yeah,
bingo.
That's perfect.
If you've got concerns with Jacoby Brissett as a passer, then just have him hand it off to Nick Chubb. But it's just like it's there for you. The option's there.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, I was looking at the like target share for the season on Cleveland last year. And of course, you know, we all know Hunt missed a chunk of games. He still had more target share percentage than Chubb did all season long. That's insane. It was close. It was 5.4% to 5, but I mean, Hunt would have blown him out of the water.
at that point.
But all right, let's jump into our receivers here and ripping through the ADP. We got Ja'Marr Chase at 3, T. T. Higgins at 12, Deontay Johnson at 13, Amari Cooper at 17, Rashad Bateman at 40, Chase Claypool at 45, Tyler Boyd at 55, David Bell at 67, Donovan Peoples-Jones at 72, and Devin Duvernay at 89. AJ, lead it off, man.
All right, so we've already looked into this QB room of Trubisky and Pickett for Pittsburgh. But with one of those two guys throwing the ball and no more juju on the field for Pittsburgh, I mean, do we think that Deontay Johnson's going to return his draft value this year?
I don't see why not. I mean, his target share last year was like 28, 29%. I mean, you're talking about prime level, like DeAndre Hopkins level target share. I mean, if you're up there, like getting close to like a 30% target share, I mean, that is noteworthy. I mean, of course, typically we look at wide receiver ones like down in the 24, 25, 26% like target range. I believe that's where Jamar Chase was at last year. And if we're seeing if Johnson is still capable of earning like that level of target share, but the expectation with either Pickett or Trubisky is that the average depth of target for each of those passes now is going to be a bit more downfield. So we're getting more yards and similar volume this year. I mean, that's, to me, it all sounds like a positive thing for Deontay. And we've seen over the past couple of seasons, his not evolution, but just like his improvement as a receiver, because coming out of college, like while I did think that it was noteworthy that Pittsburgh took them, because we've seen them develop like wide receivers almost like year in and year out, Pittsburgh gets another good receiver in the draft, but seeing him being able to not just work well against zone, and that was kind of his calling card coming out of college, but he's also been able to at least sustain or like be decent like on the perimeter, like being able to beat like man or press coverage. He's not like the best or the most like fanciest like route runner, but seeing him still be able to get open and still be at least a solid target for Ben Roethlisberger. I know he battled with drops and like all this other stuff like over the past couple of seasons, but being able to maintain that level of target share, you know, decent efficiency as well to go along with it. There's really nobody else on that team, at least that I see as of right now, that's really going to challenge him to take away like a significant number of targets to bring him back down into the lower wide receiver one, tier, because Calvin Austin, George Pickens, like good additions, don't get me wrong, but again, not guys are like, they're more role players than guys that are really going to push for targets in that offense, especially here in year one with either Trubisky or Pickett like under center. So at this point, like Deontay Johnson is probably the best value on that team. And we can have a discussion about like where you think Claypool sits at. But I think like Johnson for me is the guy that I want to have the most shares of.
Yeah, I think his consistency, if he can catch the ball, is going to be a lot better than Claypool's, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think Claypool has a great, he's got a nice floor, but he's got a variable ceiling in my mind. And it's going to depend a lot on the week to week and his target share. If he's going to get the ball thrown his way enough to really make something of it or not. So.
Yeah, Mike just put it. Our producer, Mike LaPlante, just put it in the private chat. Something I was about to say. Yeah, if you ask Claypool, he's the top three wide receiver in the NFL.
Oh, so, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you know, I love the confidence, but dude, no. yeah, Chris, man, you said everything I was going to say. You know, target share, 25, almost 26%. He was third in the, not third in the NFL, but he was like top 10, top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8th in the NFL last year. Target share, that's not going away. I mean, Claypool's a nice guy, but, you know, it's. Nice player, but he's a downfield threat. And honestly, like, you know, there's one thing to kind of take away from, like, if this is Trubisky's job. He made Allen Robinson decent. Mm-hmm. That was, like, literally all he made in Chicago. Yeah. So, like, he's a one receiver guy. Like, just pepper the guy with targets. Money That's going to be that. Deontay Johnson. So, like, I like Deontay Johnson still no matter which quarterback this is. I don't see the offense changing to a different receiver, and the target share is just going to be crazy. But I mean, the depth per target wasn't great last year. He was like barely top 60.
He's like
air yards was bad.
It's like a slot receiver, man. Like, he was just catching like these 5 yard routes.
Hey, in PPR leagues, man, that's money.
That works, yeah.
All right, so over to Cleveland here. I mean, God, you kind of said this earlier, but to go back to it, like Amari Cooper, Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell, these guys, like there was a lot of excitement around these guys being in Cleveland with Watson probably being their quarterback. But now, like that's, as we said, that's just not going to happen at this point. Not this year. So what is their take, or what does this do to their values for you with Brissett? Or it just doesn't sound like it's going to be Baker. They're just out on Baker at this point. They're still trying to trade him, but you know, so it's Brissett. It sounds like, so I mean, yeah. Cooper's still 17 ADP. That seems pretty high to me with a guy like Brissett.
Yes. And well, I would say yes at the, but at the same time, and this probably sounds gross, but he was still keeping what Devontae Parker's like, and Mike Gesicki and like a couple other guys. He was keeping their value like somewhat afloat when it was like Brissett and like Ryan Fitzpatrick kind of like battling out and like in Miami. I mean, so it's not the worst thing, but it just makes me want less of Cleveland, or only maybe like one guy like in Cleveland. Like,
yeah,
this is outside of the running backs. I'll still draft the running backs like that cost like all day long. We had that conversation, but for the pass catchers, it just lowers everybody's ceiling just because we know what Jacoby Brissett is. Like, he's been just a haphazard, like volatile quarterback. Like, even when not pressured, like in clean pockets, he's like 30 or 40th in terms of like adjusted completion percentage. Any efficiency metric you want to like throw out there, he's not good. Like, he's completely replaceable. So I'm fine with Amari Cooper somewhat at cost, because we know that with Amari Cooper's like route running ability, if you can at least give him a wide receiver core that features, let's say, a true X receiver, which at least Donovan Peoples-Jones can at least be a good facsimile of that, at least being able to have the size, the speed, the strength to draw like press coverage and maybe pull a safety his way as well, and allow Amari Cooper to do his thing. And that's where he operates best. I think that was one of the big hang up there when he was in Dallas, is that CeeDee Lamb is not your prototypical X receiver. Like, he's not like what they had like with Dez Bryant of old. Like, they needed a guy that can beat like man or press coverage. Michael Gallup can do that, but he was injured like most of the time. So you can't expect a guy like Amari Cooper to beat like man or press coverage. It's just not his game. It wasn't his game when he was in Oakland. It wasn't his game when he's in Dallas. So I'm okay with Amari Cooper in Cleveland, because they do have some of those guys that can actually do that defensively, or like tactically on the field, draw that type of attention and allow Amari Cooper to play flanker or move him to the slot. I think that'd be fine for him there. It's just that, like we were saying beforehand, having passes thrown to you from Deshaun Watson is much different than having passes thrown to you from Jacoby Brissett. So like, I could probably still see him having, let's say, a 800 yardish like type of season, 800 to 900 yards, 5-6 touchdowns, like somewhere in there. It's like certainly possible for him to have. It's just, but he would be the only Cleveland player, or at least the only Cleveland pass catcher that I probably want like on my roster. Beforehand, when it was at least the prospect of having Deshaun Watson under center, sure, now I'm interested in DPJ. I'm interested in David Njoku. I'm interested in like maybe even like Anthony Schwartz, like one of their other speed guys. Yeah. Like, I'd be interested in like these other Cleveland pass catchers. But now I just want guys that I know are talented, or I know that are athletic. And Njoku, like, he fits that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Amari Cooper fits that bill. But outside of that, I'm not really interested in those guys, just because like that pie is smaller. The ceiling is lower for all of the pass catchers now. Yeah.
I wonder if we're going to get, because one of my big knocks on Cooper for years
is that he sucks.
It's been his consistency, right?
Yeah.
He's got these like 30 to 40 point games like 3 or 4 times a year. And then outside of that, it's like, what the hell happened?
That's nothing.
Yeah, like, what happened? And so he's always like a top 12 receiver because he's got like 150 points off of 3 games. But like, I almost wonder like if he's actually going to be more consistent this year, because the offense is going to be more conservative. He's going to catch more passes, and like, he might not have the touchdowns as much, but like, he's just going to rack up some yards and catches, because this offense is going to be just obviously more run heavy. And he's just going to be like just ding a dunk with Brissett. I'm out on him. I'm still not going to draft him, especially ADP 17. Nice. I don't want it. But
just have shares of Cooper on every team this year.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna draft him just to see when I finally will pull the trigger.
Yep.
Never.
18th round. I'm not doing it.
AJ, go ahead.
All right. So, I mean, this one's pretty easy and quick. Now that we've got Hollywood Brown gone in Baltimore, I mean, what's your projected ceiling for Mr. Rashad Bateman?
Probably like, let's see. So Marquise Brown's best season was like just outside or like fairly close to like top 24. I would say just from volume alone, we have to have him in like the top 20 conversation, because if we're thinking about Lamar Jackson being an efficient passer, and even if this team doesn't go all the way back to being like the 30th ranked neutral passing rate, where the targets are going to have to go somewhere. Like Mark Andrews, absolutely. He should be like the front and center, like pivotal piece. He's essentially the Ravens version of Travis Kelce, which is great. He certainly has the efficiency. He certainly has the athleticism to fill that role. I mean, from a route running perspective, like so, like even the touchdown or not touchdown, but just the rapport with Lamar Jackson to run routes down the seam. It's all there for Mark Andrews. But if you want somebody to be there on in a, let's say, third and five, third and eight type situation where you need the precision, where you need route running, where you need a player to be at a certain position, like, or find a weak spot within a defense to be there, that is Rashad Bateman. I've been reading and like talking with folks like Matt Harmon for years in order to figure out like, okay, like what type of receiver, like how does this player like win on the field? Like how does the receiver like win on the field? And reading through his analysis of Rashad Bateman, he fits with what Baltimore, I think, is trying to do in terms of, let's say, let's move back from like the high flying, like deep ball, like connections that he had with Marquise Brown, like back in like 2019 and 2020. But let's try and let's use guys like J.K. Dobbins. Let's use guys like Gus Edwards and even Lamar himself, let's say, to get us to a third and manageable type situation. And then afterwards, like if we're put into a pure passing situation, like a third and mid or third and short, and we need to rely on somebody other than Mark Andrews, Bateman's route running abilities is like the perfect skill set for what that team needs right now versus saying, all right, Lamar, it's third and eight. Go do something. Like either, you know, go run between the tackles, scramble around, do a pirouette, and then run like another 20 yards, like to get the first down or something along those lines. They actually will have an answer like for that type of situation. And Bateman provides that. And so Bateman provides like not just that, that skill set for that particular role, but just the overall opportunity with his route running ability to be able to do like the digs, the curls, like those in and out breaking routes that require some precision and rapport with your quarterback. All that should be there for them like this season. So from an opportunity standpoint, I would easily consider Bateman within the top 20. And if all the things start to hit, like he starts having a larger presence within the red zone, not the biggest guy, but still like enough so that Lamar's starting to consistently look for him there. We're also like talking about him creeping into the top 12, but I would say baseline conversation starts at top 20, just based off of opportunity alone.
Sorry, trying to unmute. I don't know if I forget where I have him ranked right now, but it's way higher than 40. but it's so if that's his ADP, I'm gonna have a lot of shares of Rashad Bateman. But yeah, I mean, I just think opportunity is the number one thing, as you kind of said, that would drive his value much higher than that right now. And you know, I have him at 30. I mean, there's a half dozen or so guys that I could easily throw him ahead of. And that honestly, once the draft time comes, I might just be like, you know what? I just kind of like the upside of him better. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the way the rankings are one thing, but the way that your draft kind of rolls out and where what you need at certain times doesn't mean you have to go by the rankings they're not a Bible. They're just a guide. So, you know, could I take him over Darnell Mooney? Sure. Why not? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's that kind of thing. So, you know, a Mike Williams who, yeah, he's awesome, but he's also super inconsistent. So like, who knows? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I like Bateman a lot here, but let's finish up here with the Cincinnati Bengals. And man, Jamar Chase, hell of a rookie year. T. Higgins really came on strong at the end, was actually a better receiver down the stretch for fantasy. Both these guys are inside the top 12 in most people's rankings and the ADP right now.
Yep.
Do you actually think that both of these guys can finish as wide receiver ones?
Yeah, why not? I mean, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams just did the exact same thing last season. And like I'm on the same wavelength as you, Joe. I mean, Mike Williams, like, super inconsistent, but in PPR, they wound up doing it. T. Higgins, like, I would say the argument that I've heard about drafting a team's wide receiver two that early when there are other wide receiver ones available, like around that same time frame, y'all can miss me with that argument. Like, T. Higgins, like, while when you say like wide receiver two, the connotation instantly sparks, well, he's going to see just like significantly less targets. Like the same opportunity is not going to be afforded to him as the team's wide receiver one, like blah, blah, blah. But like you just said, Joe, like T. Higgins had a higher target share than Ja'Marr Chase, like down the stretch. Like this is the same Bengals offense that once we got into like weeks 10 through 18, they were up in like upper neutral passing rate, like on early downs, all of that stuff, like more efficient, more scoring, all of that. And T. Higgins outshone like Ja'Marr Chase. He was more efficient than Ja'Marr Chase, like down the stretch.
More consistent.
Yes, way more consistent. So it's just if we're already seeing at the very least, not just a wide receiver one, wide receiver two, but how about a 1A and 1B type situation if we want to throw labels at it? Because overall, like if you just want to stretch out like over the entire 17-game 2021 season, I mean, they were only apart by about like in terms of like raw target share by like 1.5%, 2%, something like that. So it's not enough, it's not that big of a gap to say that, well, Ja'Marr Chase is the wide receiver one and T. Higgins is like wide receiver two. Now, if you want to look at the gap between T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, okay, fine. Like that's yeah. That's a good enough gap to say that now we're looking at two different players.
Yeah.
But between Higgins and Chase, nah. Like there's enough, and Higgins has shown enough explosiveness. Like we were happy having just Higgins as the wide receiver one when Cincinnati drafted him in 2020. So it's like, now we have like two explosive, like top 12, like potential top 12 receivers like on the team. Why not? Like, I don't understand why you would want to shy away from drafting a player like that with that type of potential at this point, just because you want to give them the label like wide receiver too.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. You're spot on, man. Target share for Chase last year was 23.7. Target share for Higgins was 20.4. And it actually got better as the season went on. Targets overall, 128 to 110. I mean, both top notch.
And Higgins missed a game.
Huh?
And Higgins missed a game. He missed two games.
He missed two games early, and he missed the last game of the season, which actually is being counted into all of this. So I can't filter out week 18, but he did miss week two and four. Higgins just, to me, like, I don't actually want to draft Chase at wide receiver three or two. I want to draft Higgins two rounds later, you know, because he's going late second, early third type of thing. So I'm happy to get him. I think he's going to be a little more consistent still. This offense clearly can support two wide receivers that high. Yes. And I don't have any doubt that they can both do it. So,
yeah. I think when we're drafting, you should be drafting with the idea that, or at least with the question of, can this guy that I'm taking at this cost exceed the cost that I'm taking him at? Because that's how you win.
Yes.
Right. Like you want guys that can be able to exceed their ADP. Like think about Cooper Kupp last year, Hunter Renfrow last year. I mean, Hunter Renfrow is obviously different because we were drafting him rounds like later, but like Cooper Kupp specifically. So now in Ja'Marr, like the Ja'Marr Chase example, Ja'Marr Chase example, what's the chances that now he's going to exceed his already like first round, like draft cost? Like you're asking him to be essentially the same receiver he was last year, which was a record breaking season. And then some more as well. You're essentially asking him to be 2021 Cooper Kupp, who was like the first Triple Crown winner in 20-ish years, if I'm remembering correctly. So is that an easier proposition than just saying, let's just have T. Higgins be the exact same dude that he was last year over like that final 8-game stretch in an offense that we know is good and could be better, assuming that they pass at a similar passing rate, same efficiency, like blah, blah, blah with Joe Burrow at like almost a round and a half ish discount.
Yeah.
I would much rather do like the Higgins, like, you know, versus like the Chase proposition.
Yeah. No, me too. And I also think, like, even if you miss on both of those guys, like, receivers, we went through all the team previews over the last month or so. And, man, I just noticed throughout the whole thing that the wide receiver ADPs are so much more favorable this year than running backs. Like, you get to that, like, round 3, 4, 5 range of running backs, and you're like, ew.
Yeah,
but you're looking at receivers, and you're like, damn, that guy could be good. That guy could be good.
Right.
Like, yeah. You're like, damn, there's a lot of nice receivers that are falling because everybody's going super heavy. You know, there's the argument like, okay, you know, Zay, when everybody's abs, go get all the receivers and then wait on running back. But I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that this year. You might get crushed trying to do that, you know, wait on running back deal this year. There's just not a lot of guys, man, that I feel that I feel good about, like, after round, like, 3, it feels like.
No, I'm 100%.
Like, maybe a handful.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you, because if you think about, like, I've done a number of, like, Best Ball Mania drafts on Underdog, and that's half-point PPR. But, like, if you look at what's going on in, like, the 3rd or 4th round, it's, like, people are reaching for, like, Zeke, but at the same time, you've got Deontay Johnson available there. Either of the two Denver wide receivers, Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy is there.
I mean,
there's just so many other. Terry McLaurin, like, typically goes, like, around that area too. Yeah. So, like, they're just other good receivers that are typically being drafted in the 3rd and 4th round. Whereas the running backs that are there, it's like, flip a coin.
I mean, right.
You can probably make the case for them, but it's like, you can make the same case for probably most of the other guys that are being drafted.
Yeah. I mean, I get the argument too, where, and we're going off on the tangent, but last thing I would say is I get the argument where, like, you know, running backs don't return their value as much as receivers do. So go after those receivers early. But, like, there's also the argument where the later running backs you draft, the less, like, the less and less and less points that they give you in return. Yeah. So, like, it just snowballs even worse. Like, yeah, you're going to hit on the Elijah Mitchells randomly, but, like, that's just pure luck in my opinion. So,
yeah.
All right, AJ, let's jump into the tight ends and finish this thing out.
Okay. So we are looking at Mark Andrews at number 2. We are looking at Pat Furfurth at 11.
Muth.
Yes.
The Muth is loose.
David Njoku at 20, and his battle mate there, Hayden Hurst, at 21. What you got?
Can I just take Mark Andrews and not have to worry about, like, any of these other, like, tight ends, like, at all?
Because you can sell me on
David Njoku. Like, when he came out, what was it, his second year in the league, he had, like, something north of a 16%, like, somewhere around 15-16% target share. You know, peaked into, like, the, you know, top 12, like, tight end list, like, around there. So it's possible he can do it again. And since we've already had the conversation about, like, who might be or what type of quarterback play to expect with the Browns, all of that just kind of makes it a mixed bag. Like, I was happy and fine with drafting David Njoku, especially after he got his extension, which, good for him. But I was happy with the prospect of taking him just based off of he showed some good stuff last year. We saw, at least from an efficiency standpoint, his yards per route run, like, started to pick up a bit. Target share started to develop a bit more. We just saw him play more. So all of those things, like, were at least trending upwards for him. And now he has, let's say, a slight setback in who might be playing quarterback for the Browns this season. But it's just Mark Andrews. I mean, it's just, like, there's really no other option, like, as of right now. I mean, if you look at it from, like, an efficiency standpoint, I mean, top 3, top 4 in yards per route run last season. He's up there with, like, the guys that we expect to be up there, like Dallas Goedert, like George Kittle, Kyle Pitts. I mean, those types of tight ends that we know have not just the target share, but the ability to do something with those targets, like, after the fact. Like, yards after the catch, like, per attempt, like, in the top 20, like, for that as well. So it's just, and also, of course, the big thing, like, for tight ends, he's got the red zone opportunity. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, top 3 in terms of red zone targets last year as well. And, like, we don't expect that to change at all, looking at, like, what's going on, like, with Baltimore.
Well, so who do you have tight end 1? Andrews or Kelsey?
Still Kelsey for me.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe it's me. Because I graduated from the University of Cincinnati. Travis Kelce and his brother both graduated from the University of Cincinnati. And so maybe I'm playing Homer just a little bit. But just given the fact that I think he does, we can all agree, that Kelce does have like the better passing quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, despite the fact that Kelce is, you know, what, 4-ish years older than Mark Andrews, maybe 5, if I'm remembering correctly. I think Mark Andrews is 27, 28, right?
That's a good question.
Andrews is 27, 28, and Kelce is what, 32, 33?
He's 31.
31? I thought he was going to be 32 at the starting. Yeah.
So Andrews is 26. He'll turn 27 right as the season starts, basically. Okay. And then I want to say Gronk and Kelce are the same age. So they're both 31, 30, 32.
32. Yeah. So like 5-ish years apart. So, of course, like the age model favors Andrews. But still, with Kelce's average depth of target, better quarterback, and just overall like target share as well, like essentially matching Andrews, I do think that I give the edge to Kelce, but
yeah,
it's real close.
It is really close. I do like that. And so you kind of ripped through a whole bunch of these, but just to hit a quick question on it. So Pat Freiermuth, do you like him at all as kind of, do you like him in the tight end one range, you know, with the uncertainty at quarterback?
Yeah. I mean, because especially where he's going in drafts, I mean, he's super affordable in drafts as of right now. But he had like about like a 13-ish like percent target share last year, like, which is fine, but he didn't really consistently play. Like he didn't have more than 50% of the snaps until after week 5. Mm-hmm. So he was third amongst all tight ends in terms of red zone targets last year. And like I was saying earlier, that's what we really want, like for our tight ends. If I remember correctly, since 2019, the average, the average has been like 8 tight ends that have been in the top 10 for red zone targets have also been in the top 10 for like overall fantasy scoring as well. So like you need those touchdowns in order to be a top 12 like tight end. That's really what you need. So if he's already getting the red zone targets last year, I mean, even if he does have, let's say a slight downgrade in quarterback play, like overall, because you're not having Ben just like pick it up and rip it like, you know, 4 or 5 yards, but if he's still capable of earning that type of opportunity just within like the, let's say like 10-ish games last year, I'm in on him, especially at his cost, like for 2022.
Yeah. I do like him as one of those back end guys that you can get in the draft.
Oh, yeah. Here.
And then last thing, you kind of hit on Njoku, but like, so do either Njoku or Hurst, nobody's drafting these guys, but do you think either one of them stands a chance of being fantasy relevant this season, and which one and why?
If I had to guess, I would say that it's Hurst, like just for the simple fact that he plays like with the better quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And, but this is also like the role, like the tight end role, like for Cincinnati, while they have been like towards the back end of the league in terms of like targets to their tight end. But we saw like Uzoma pop off for these games because we were seeing either used down the field and also like the role that they have. I think Uzoma was third on the team, like in third down targets. And so like, so mixing in along with, because that's where like Mixon's like ceiling is capped, because they were just using other guys like in those roles and also like in the red zone as well. Like Uzoma was tied like I think for third or fourth on the team. So like there's enough opportunity from an overall raw target share perspective, but also in the places that we need it to be for Hurst to actually like return. It won't be like maybe like for full season like top 12. But he'll pop up like for like a top 10-ish week, I'd say like at least like 5 or 6 games, which I think for his cost, that's definitely worth drafting.
Yeah, he'll get scooped up, I guarantee it, just like Uzoma did. So
yeah,
I mean, well, that's it for the preview of the division for at least the players. But we got one last question.
All right. So what is your division standings prediction?
So my division standings prediction will have Cincinnati up front, Baltimore right behind them at second. And then I'm still thinking that Cleveland, just looking at their defensive moves over the past season, they'll still be able to scrape out enough wins to stay, let's say, in, I don't want to say like wild card contention, but probably like third in the division. And then the Steelers like kind of, you know, bringing up the rear.
All right, yeah, I think I'm gonna go a little different. I'm gonna go Baltimore first. I'm gonna go Cincy second, both in the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
And then I'm gonna go Pittsburgh. I'm gonna put some faith in Trubisky. I don't know why.
Oh wow, man, you living on the edge.
I am. And maybe it's just because my Scott Fish draft that I'm in, my mock draft, everybody went quarterback and I picked first overall and timed out because I didn't realize I was even in the mock. I was like, oh, cool. All right, here we go. And I was like, oh, I already have JT. All right, never mind. And I just said, screw it. You know what? I'm going to just punt quarterback. So I'm feeling a little Trubisky. I think he could surprise some people.
All right.
So it's tough. The top is tough. Cincy and Baltimore. You know what? Still going to go Cincy, then Baltimore. I am going to go Pittsburgh next too. I think their defense is just so good. And they've got, they've got the running game. I think they have better receivers than Cleveland. And I'm not really convinced that Brissett's any better than Trubisky or Pickett, to be honest. So I just feel like the overall talent is slightly better for Cleveland. I'm going to put Cleveland last, but it'll probably be quite the distance between the top two and the next two there.
Yeah. Yeah.
For game, maybe two or like a random tie between Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, Chris, I want to thank you for coming on and joining us again. I think you're coming on the Scott Fish show theme show that we're doing in a few weeks here on July 11th to raise money for MS. Stay tuned on Twitter for more info about that. And before we let you go, just remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter. And I have a freaking like gnat flying around my stupid house right now. This is like flying in front of the screen.
Oh, so it's
I'm
so
like
annoying.
Just yeah. grabbing yeah. stuff like in midair.
That's I don't know.
Anyway, let everybody know where they can find you online and what you got going on this year, man.
So you can find me on Twitter at Chris Allen FFWX. I don't know, like right now, few projects like going on. So the FFWX in my handle is for weather. I'm actually working on a research article, like just looking at the way that the cold actually impacts a quarterback play. Working on that right now. Between that and a couple other pieces that I've like team strategy or like best ball drafting, like we're really heavy into like underdog best ball mania 3 like type strategy pieces. I've written a couple of pieces for that on 444 as well. So between that, you can find me on Football Guys, their YouTube channel. I do like a 6-7 minute video on like making a case for a player, so you can catch me there. Weekly content, like you know, as you'll probably see it like reposted on my Twitter timeline at some point. So yeah, any questions or anything like that, just come hit me up.
Absolutely, man. And yeah, awesome. Great stuff from you as always. So
I gotta give you a shout out to the EH Taylor, as you can see.
Oh yes.
A few back here as well.
It's good stuff. Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's hard so to smooth. Find now.
Yes. I had my brother-in-law had a buddy out in Chicago that brought me the bottle.
Nice. Cool. Awesome.
All right, man. Well, we'll have to let you go, Chris. But again, we will be talking to you soon.
Most def. Yeah. Anytime y'all need me, just give me a call.
We'll do. Absolutely. All right, man. See
you.
All right, guys. That is it for the show. Next week, we will be covering. Oh, what are we doing next week? Let's see. Here. I'm on the wrong one. Let's see here. NFC South with Miss Linda.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that one. It's going to be good. This one will actually be on Thursday. We will be back to the regularly scheduled program. But in the meantime, make sure you check out those subscriptions on Fantasy Six Pack. And we will talk to you later.